Welcome everyone to another episode of Writing on Whidbey Island, also known as WOWIE, and located at writingonwhidbeyisland.com. This podcast is about all things writing as it relates to Whidbey Island. My name is Don, and today I am joined by Lauren and Sarah, and we also have a guest participant today, and Lauren, would you like to introduce her, please?
Yeah, of course. We have a very cool guest today. Her name is Barbara Wolf Tetto. Which is an awesome name, if I do say so. She has a doctorate of education, and she is actually the first doctor on our show. So she comes with quite the list of accomplishments behind her. Yeah, her credentials are quite long. She is the author of Reconfigured, a memoir, and she's got a couple websites, Of the Blue PLA, so Of the Blue, PLA.net. And then her name, Barbara.
Yeah, it's really clever because it works out as planet.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I was hoping you got that. Yeah,
yeah. I thought it was quite a clever wordplay. Yeah.
Plaid.net.
Plaid.net. So Of the Blue, plaid.net. Planet. Okay, but the other website is Barbara Wolf Terao, which is TERAO.com. So Barbara. How are you today?
Great. I'm so happy to be here and be here on Whidbey, talking about writing on Whidbey, which is where I enjoyed, you know, more than any other place I've enjoyed writing here on Whidbey. So
tell us about your writing. What have you done in the writing world?
You know, I've always been a writer as far as even when I was a kid, my parents would give me journals every Christmas and expect me to write a book someday. So that was always in the back of my head. Someday I'll write a book. Meanwhile, I'm just trying to get submissions to newspapers, magazines, journals. Wrote for psychology journals. Did a lot of book reviews for a psychology journal, which was really fun.
Oh, that's cool.
For a while. And just when my kids were young, I did a newspaper column in Illinois. So that was really also fun. And then, you know, as far as using my psychology degree, I did teach psychology at a university, my educational psychology degree, and I loved focusing on intercultural learning, how we learn from other cultures and people and places around the world and from nature. And in fact, the very first book I was really thought I might get done and write was about you know, the power of nature, what we might learn from nature and what we could learn from indigenous people and how they took care of nature and how we're not taking care of nature. And yet, there were so many books that came out right around then that were like, I think they've already covered this pretty well, you know, about how children need to be out in nature and all those things. So then I kind of just took a back step, you know, a few steps back on the book idea and just kept writing. And when I moved, you know, here, was able to write for Seattle Times, a couple front page articles for their Sunday section of, you know, the paper, Sunday magazine. And that was hugely gratifying and amazing.
Oh,
that was
sure.
Like, they were just love working with those people, and could talk more about that later. But but my writing journey really culminated. And as much as I loved writing essays and articles all these years, because I write nonfiction, right? To have written my memoir and to write that was so meaningful and was so worth it. And I just really encourage other writers, like, there's something about doing the slightly longer form, and I'm not like a huge long book writer like some of my writer friends, but to put it down, you start to process more what you went through and see all these connections, metaphors that you hadn't noticed, synchronicities, and that was really amazing what I went through, or now I can help other people because of this, or, you know, for me it was going through medical things and marital things, but and it's about moving to Whidbey, so it was really, and I can talk more about this too, but it was really the pandemic that gave me time to write, because I'm a social extroverted person, love talking to all you guys so much, we could sit here for hours, but, and I love doing book talks and all that stuff. Questions and answers, but I was like, I always felt like, oh, I could go on a walk with someone. There's so many beautiful beaches and forests, and I'm like, if I didn't go on a walk with someone every day, I felt like, oh no. So been sitting at my desk one day with the pandemic, and we're supposed to be isolated.
Mm-hmm.
January 2022, I guess this would be, and sat down and said, well, I'm a working writer. What if I'm a working writer? Oh, shit. That means, oh, excuse me, but that means I have to work, actually.
Sure.
And so from then on, I wrote pretty much every day for more than a year until I had something to show.
So you had it. And you finally completed your book.
Yeah, and the book came out last month, in July 2023.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So some of the subjects in your book are a little bit more on the serious side that you kind of really hit on, but you still use humor throughout it and everything.
Thank you for noticing that. Yeah. I totally rely on humor a lot, and it is kind of heavy material, and when I gave the book talk the other day at Kingfisher, it happened to be the day when everybody found out Tokate, the Lolita whale, had died.
Oh.
And I thought, I'm not going to start with my humorous weird stuff, which is my first chapter, as a lot of humor and the weird things that happen as I'm waiting for my cancer diagnosis that were just like, you know, weird, superstitious, and Barbie, the Barbie doll, and the Barbie dream house came into that chapter, and all these things that were like really fun to start off with. And I said, no, I'm too somber. So we had a quiet time to remember and honor and help her on her passage to come return to her pod, her family. Which I had to think of course. But But anyway, then I said, well, I feel more somber, so I'm going to read about a little bit why I moved to Whidbey to honor this homeland of Tokate, right? And so we all had a moment of silence, and then also, you know, just to think about this beautiful place where she came from and where her spirit is returning. And but usually I like to... And at my very first book talk, which was at the Freeland Library here on Whidbey Island, I was relying on humor pretty heavily. And because I think it's a way of deflecting serious and scary and
sad. Oh, absolutely.
Sad.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
You can hear me even get choked up talking about an orca whale who died. Finally, a woman who was there, and I later found out who she was, Nancy Hepp, who runs a beautiful cancer website called Cancer Choice, which I recommend to anyone who has any questions about cancer, whether you're going through it or you know someone who is. Anyway, so totally respect her. She's there. I didn't know it was her. She says, could you talk more about cancer and basically saying, can you get real? And I'm like, yes, I can.
Yeah, so really digging in deep to what that means. And
I realized that's a big part. That's a theme. That's
sure.
a big part, an arc of my book.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized I need to delve into that when I'm doing my book talks, to give a flavor of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not to give away too many spoilers, but just to be like, this is what you go through. And this is, and again, there's a positive spin I can give to it, which is that it sounds really hokey to say cancer has its gifts, but it does. And so I like to read a section where I share a gift that I feel I got from going through cancer, how it helped change my life in a good way. And there's a couple examples like that in the book, and other people can vouch to that. Not that we'd wish it on anyone or we're glad we got it, but it's like, I got something. I'm transformed by this, and some of it in a good way.
Yes.
I have more compassion
for
people. Because if you suffer, you're like, oh, I didn't know suffering could be like this and how much you need other people. Because I was always like, I can handle it on my own.
Yes.
But, you need others.
The greatest blessings can come from the deepest suffering, you know, and that is something that I've seen other people in my life also experience. And everything, so I'm very happy to hear that you gain something positive through all of this.
And you having a background or experience in Japan, there's a Japanese phrase that I use in the book, Hendoku Iyaku, and it means turning poison into medicine, and also Tenryu Kyoju, lightening your karma. So there is a sense of, whoa, literally, when you get chemotherapy, it's literally... They're poisoning you to save your life.
Exactly.
So it is poison turned into medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And my medication came from the yew trees originally. I think they synthesize it now. but and yew trees are poisonous. The leaves are poisonous. That's why they put them around graveyards in Wales to keep the cattle from going on the graves. And so literally I was thought, well, I love trees, so I'm taking this poison in, but turning it into medicine, right?
Wow.
And then in other aspects too, dealing with something that's not fun to go through, I'm like,
oh, sure.
How can I learn from this? Mm-hmm. And here we are in the Earth School, right? We're here to learn. So I'm like, well, thank you, I guess. I'm learning.
Sure. Now, you wrote your book while on the island,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I would say 100%.
100% of it was written on the island.
Yes.
That's amazing. Okay, well, that leads us then to the perfect segue. So, Sarah.
Indeed.
Please join us.
Hello.
Welcome.
Would you like to introduce our topic for today?
I would love to. Yes. Our topic today is retreating to write. So, literally, coming to Whidbey to write. A lot of people come to Whidbey to Hedgebrook or to other writers' retreats. I did that for many years. And but also not just coming to Whidbey, but also maybe retreating from the world or retreating to your personal space or... some of your articles I know have been about how do you kind of create your own writer's retreat at home. So a little bit about the process of like how do we carve out those spaces for ourselves to explore our thoughts and our writing. And
I think that comes down to, in part, knowing yourself. And the thing about writing residencies and writing retreats and getting a chance to go to Hedgebrook, or like when I had a chance to go to Ragdale, which is in Illinois, it's a really beautiful spot.
Is that the name of the retreat or the town it's in?
The name
or?
Of the residency is Ragdale. It's in like forest of sort of a suburb of northern suburb of Chicago.
Okay.
And it's where the Shaw family, like one of the Shaws, you know, did. They were a very artistic, creative family, writers and sculptors, like the woman, you know, from the Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, there's a statue of the bird girl in front. That was made right there at Ragdale.
Oh, wow.
And their family owned that place, and when they left it to be a creative retreat, residency kind of thing. So, yeah, it's really an honor to get to know go to those places, and I've been at Hedgebrook for only a week at a time. You had a residency, Sarah? Or?
No, I just, there's a little cabin that you can rent out. It's called the Writer's Retreat, so the Writer's Refuge, actually, and I did that for, many, many years. I came up here probably 6 or 7 times. Most of my novels have been written in that little cabin.
Oh, gosh. Oh, so that worked for you.
Yeah.
What was it, do you think? Just the quiet, or just...
The quiet and having, like, the only thing to think about was what I felt like doing in that moment. So,
And part of that's because they have, lack of better terms, a cafeteria. They handle the food.
They do at Hedgebrook, yeah. In my place, they just, so not affiliated with Hedgebrook at all, just like a separate cabin that you can rent. And so I just did my own food. So it was actually pretty near the Goose, and I would go to the Goose and be like, what do I feel like having?
And get a bunch of stuff.
I've been on the grounds once or twice there. I've seen their cafeteria area, and I was with a friend, and I think she was doing a repair in one of the cabins or something like that. So I've seen the grounds a little bit. What our listeners don't know is Hedgebrook, I believe, is a women's writing retreat.
Only women.
Right. So, you know, I've gotten to go around on the grounds a little bit, but it's a nice spot.
Everybody gets their own little cottage, they like to call it. Nancy Nordoff is the, Shelley, whose name I'm forgetting, two women founded this place and funded it in a way that when you go to Hedgebrook, you get all your meals, you live in your own little cabin, and you get to stay there for 2 weeks or a month, and you pay zero cents, you know. So it's quite a wonderful opportunity, and they very much encourage people who have been disadvantaged in some way or not, people of color, people who have not had a chance to write, or not had space to write, to apply and to take advantage of Hedgebrook. And the new director there, Kimberly Wilbur, is just wonderful and still going strong. But yeah, so I feel like for me, I am such an extrovert that I have too much fun when I go to these things. The people are so interesting who go to these, and just I get too, yeah. I'll go on, you know, they're in beautiful places, so I'm into nature and I'm into people, so that takes up most of my attention, and then I get home and go, I hardly wrote anything.
And then there's those of us that are the introverts that may still go to an event or a retreat like that, engage with those other people, and at a certain point you go, you know, I've done my 15 to 120 minutes, I'm retreating back to my cabin to be in my own little private space, just because that, you know, I can do this for so long, but then I need to recharge. I need to do my thing my way.
Mm-hmm. Where do you write usually, Don?
So I spend actually a lot of time in more or less what I refer to as my office at my house. Mm-hmm. And essentially it's, if you saw the chaos room, you might be a little bit more of the mind of it's part office, part light workshop. So, and it just, I'm not worried about having the pristine workspace. That doesn't, if it's too, not aesthetic, what's astringent? Austere would be a good, sterile, that's what I was looking for, but austere is a great word, yeah. Thank you.
That's a good word.
We've got the thesaurus group here.
Write it down.
The
so
thesaurus support
that
group. Yeah, step one. anyway, no, I spend a fair amount of time in there. In a way, the chaos is part of my process, but, you know, it's, I just get in my space and crank stuff out, and, you know, my, part of my process is, I actually need a certain amount of distraction, because I'll overthink things. I think brain work too fast, mouth work too slow. so more or less, I'll end up putting on movies, usually movies, sometimes documentaries, except documentaries and music get my attention too much. But if you have a movie on, oddly enough, they have kind of a rhythm to them. And I kind of watch the computer screen writing with one eye and, you know, watch the movie with another eye, and I'll still take it in, even if it's a new-to-me film. But yeah.
Oh, my God, I could never do that.
I know!
I would be, like, just focused on that movie.
Yeah, I totally get sucked in.
Yeah, and see, that's me with music.
Unusual, yeah.
Yeah, that's not an unusual word associated with me. No, the movie seemed to be kind of the right background noise. But I've listened to numerous other authors say that they've got a collection of music that they'll put on, and they'll say, you know, if I'm writing a love scene one day, or if I'm writing a fight scene, or, you know, whatever, right? They've got this album for this mood, that they want to write in, and they have to have that on in the background and call it. Because I'm a musician, if I have music on, I stop paying attention to the writing and start paying attention to what's going on within the music. And I stop writing. Short one is I found that if I'm stuck with something that I'm writing, I'll put on, apparently, and I'm kind of unaware of this, it's a style called new jazz, N-U-J-A-Z-Z. And it's Mammal Hands and Go-Go Penguin are my two go-to groups. There's two other solo artists. I don't remember their name. I haven't listened to them as much, but boy, that music just goes. And if I put it on with earbuds, it just blocks everything out, and something about its pace, I just zip.
That's a great thing to find out about yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to figure those things out. Like, what are the things that help you write? Mm-hmm. I'm still working on that.
And I've told you, Don, that my husband is a musician and plays guitar and bazooka.
Yeah, that's right.
Irish music, Celtic music.
That's right, that's right.
As Japanese people do, I guess. You know, it's, even though he's 100% Japanese.
I've heard that and the pub scene are big in Japan right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And in Chicago, where we were, that was really big. So that's one reason he took him a while to move out here.
Yeah, I've known several local musicians within more the Irish trad scene, the ones that have bands. They're getting hired often enough, if they're a big enough name, they're getting hired often enough to go to Japan, let alone, you know, it's like, you want to make some bank, you get a job for St. Patrick's Day in Japan.
I'll tell him what, yeah. But for me, when we did find a house together on Whidbey Island, my husband and I made sure, I literally brought a CD player with me, and because I needed his studio space where he'd be rehearsing, which he does every day, plays his tunes, would need to be at one end of the house, and my study and the bedroom, our bedroom, would need to be at the other end of the house. And I took the CD player and I'd play the CD, close the door, and see if I go in my workspace that I would want in this house that's for sale, then if I could hear the music, that wasn't the house for me. So that's how we decided on our house.
The music is one end
and the writing is at the other.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
And that works for us.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I get distracted really easily by things like that. So
yeah, it's
I have
music.
To
music is just like,
sure, but yeah. I have to play this really soft kind of ASMR type you know, music. So I have my YouTube is like nothing but like this constant loop of this, you know. Depending on what I'm writing,
so
I have different.
So it doesn't take your attention, right?
No, but I turn it down real low as well, so it's not the
and
thing
she's
that's
already tracked 1 million plays on one track.
Yeah, the Slytherin common room, you know? but I play.
Somehow that makes sense.
It should make perfect sense. but no, I depending on what I'm writing, I'll play like a different, you know, type of music, but it's not an album though. It's always the same. It's like the same like 8 hour loop. Like, so this one's for my fantasy and this one's for this and this one's for sci-fi and this one's for whatever, you know. So whatever mood that I'm trying to hit, I'll have that music kind of going, but it's really low, it's really quiet, so it's not fighting for my attention. It's just kind of there in the background, if that makes sense.
I have a YouTube playlist of just rain sounds, different rain sounds.
Yeah.
But it's only for if there's other people around and I need quiet.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
But I turn it really down.
Yeah.
Like white
and,
noise, I'm on.
Yeah, and that's when I've used that new jazz, is when I need to block other people out, really.
Sure.
I mean, I used to love the library of yesteryear when it was actually a quiet place of study, but now it's a jungle gym. But sometimes I need to go to the library for, you know, different research that I can't say do online. And I may want to sit there and work, but there's nowadays people bouncing off the walls and eating sandwiches on top of everything and whatever. You know, yeah, sometimes I've turned around, God, I need to study this book for this bit of writing and take some notes, you know, whatever. But all of this other distraction that's not like watching a movie, right? That's just messing me up. Oh, hey, great. I've got that cell phone that's got the music on it. I've got these earbuds, and I can just block that out.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is kind of this funny area, because when I'm out in public, I also like to not be distracted and know what's going on around me. So it's a little uncomfortable at that point. It works for me, but it's uncomfortable.
One thing that's helped me as an extrovert is having to sit down and just write, and I'm hoping to connect with other people, but it's sort of like writing it sort of in this English paper kind of writing narrative kind of way at first. And when I did hire a developmental editor, when I got my brain started to fuzz over as I looked at it and said,
sure,
I have no idea if this is the good direction, what should I leave in, what should I expand, what should I take out. And my developmental editor, whose name was Annie Tucker, I don't know if she does developmental editing anymore, but if she did, I'd recommend her to anyone. But we do it by phone because it was COVID.
Sure.
And Annie said, you know, a lot of people have a good story, but what's the reader going to take away from that story? That's, you got to include something for the reader. And I said, a takeaway? She said, yes, for the reader. And I said, do you mean I get to talk directly to my readers? And she said, yeah, are you comfortable with that? I'm like, oh my gosh, I'd love to do that more.
Suddenly I started the rewrite. The total rewrite.
So I did this thing where I'm telling this mostly in, you know, what do you call it, past tense? I was going to say, I don't know, in past tense. And then when I have a takeaway, I say, and when we blah, 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 I use the present tense and say some insight or wisdom, hard-earned wisdom, you know, usually at the end of a chapter, but not always, you know, where I'm like, And you know what it did too? It made me clarify and articulate those things better to myself too, where I'm like, ooh, I did learn a few things with that. And
sure.
I do have a notion now, what is home to me? What is, you know, a good relationship to me?
Mm-hmm.
What is, I don't know. There's all sorts of wisdom in there. I can't even remember.
And I've seen books on the other side of that where they could use that developmental editor, somebody that came in and said, so are you talking to the audience or are you just writing this book for your own gratification? Mm-hmm. You know, because you can, again, you can do both with that too. You can satisfy yourself within what you're doing with your writing, but you know, make the book actually worth it to the person that purchased the thing.
Yeah, and there is something very cathartic and helpful to just blah on the page, but then, you know, clean up the blah and make it, you know.
Or even if that's process, just, you know, do the blah, get it out of the way, and
right.
then do the writing.
And journals, I recommend journaling for everybody, and I relied on my journals so much for, you know, going back and writing this where, yeah, unfortunately.
I'm sure that was invaluable.
Yeah, it was really helpful. Didn't make my husband look good sometimes, but because I would be like when I was frustrated with him, and he's an extreme introvert in my opinion. My kids would say so too. It would be like I'd write, I can't talk to him, so I'm going to talk in my journal, you know, write down all this stuff in my journal. So I have a lot about him. So some of it made it in the book, which he's not thrilled about.
See, this is also a bit of a chuckle to me because, I mean, myself, I didn't move to the island with the intent to write. I kind of half grew up on the island. I half grew up in North Seattle and mostly grew up in North Seattle, but I was coming over here visiting my grandparents so much, this was second home. So when I moved here, it wasn't really kind of a move. It was and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I was living in a house on the south end of the island, partly being there because it would get visited by burglars once or twice a year.
Oh.
And it was unoccupied, so it was low-hanging fruit for people that wanted something easy. In the process, and I partly moved here to start my baking business, which I ended up pivoting to writing recipe books, this whole thing. But before I was able to start working on the business, I was basically camping out in this house for a number of months, because my dad and I were, partially involved in building it, but he was a little bit more involved in getting a hip replacement. So when the house couldn't otherwise be watched, it was my job to stay down there. And at whatever point, kind of spinning my wheels, like, you know, there's that thing I know about playing Highland bagpipes and becoming a Highland bagpiper. And I had written before these, what was supposed to just be photocopies that I was going to give my students, right? It was, you know, here's how to maintenance your instrument. Here's what to think about when you go and play a wedding, whatever. And they were just going to be these handouts that I'd give to my students and say, put this into your notebook, right? And then that way, when they would turn around and go, I kind of forgot what I need to do for maintaining my bagpipes. Okay, we'll read the document, and then let's talk about it afterward. But I didn't want to repeat myself,
right?
So I had started writing these before I moved to the island, but at one point when I was spinning my wheels sitting in this house waiting for my dad to heal up so we could get back to work on this house, I don't blame him for that. Some of these things started coming into my mind, and I was like, oh, I should turn on my computer and write that thing down. And then I wrote down three things or whatever, and this started building, and I ended up writing notes, and I was really puking them out. Right? Because they were really notes and I was doing no punches pulled. And in some cases I was writing things along the lines of, sometimes you have some real MF clients that try to screw you over, but don't let them, you know, whatever. I mean, I was just puking this out because it was flowing and that was the best way to do it. And then when I got to the point where I was done just expelling all of these ideas, right? I was like, okay, nothing more to write. Haven't been on the internet in a while. Let's walk into Langley. And I'm walking down I didn't have a car.
Yeah.
Walking down the road, and I'm pulling out my phone to kind of get reattached to, you know, reconnected with some friends. And I'm looking at it, and it's Saturday?
What year is it?
I had been writing for 16 hours a day. for 2 weeks straight, and I thought it was a Friday.
Wow.
Yeah, I just belted all of this out, and this project has come back around for me now. Mm-hmm. I had that retreat, so to speak. I had that house to myself and that space to myself for 2 weeks from dusk to dawn, pounding away at my keyboard, right? Not, you know, being very introverted in that regard. And now this, because it's not the situation of puke the thing out and then write it, I'm now revisiting this project, and it's starting to get back on my radar for one to finish and publish to a rather limited audience, I'll admit. Highland Bagpipers. Yeah, but I gotta write it because it, you know, it pleases me, but there's also some value there for other people. But I have to translate that literary vomit into something that's more composed. Maybe take out a couple of F-bombs.
No, please leave them in.
I've thought of making two versions, actually. And have that little...
Red band version.
No, I'm going to have that little explicit lyric parental advice, you know. Yeah. I've told a few other pipers. It's like, yeah, this is how I originally wrote this. And there's one guy down in California. He's like, oh, you have to leave that in. You need to put the piping community on its ear, because in some respects they're very proper. In other respects, I mean, get them into the beer garden and they're not, you know, but in a book they're expecting proper. And Eric and I are sitting there kind of, because he's also working on an instruction book. And he's shown me this, and it's like he showed me a picture of this thing, and he's got this cobbled together cover with like glue and paste and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, Eric, you might work on the cover. He's like, yeah, no, I kind of like the punk look.
Oh my God.
I think it's time to stick that in the faces of the piping community.
Shake them up a little.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, so this is where he's coming from when he says, leave the F-bombs in. So, yeah, at some point, I'll be back in the office with my stack of DVDs from the library, pounding away at that thing and occasionally pulling out the new jazz. So.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Big pause.
Big pause. Well, I feel like you guys have some questions as far as, for all of us, of what's special. Is there anything special about Whidbey that nurtures writers?
Ooh.
Or... is there any particular angle on Whidbey you wanted to tackle? Besides the wasps.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for wearing a color that they're attracted to, because they're not coming
at
me now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, y'all are the outdoorsy people.
Well, but
were you writing before you came to Whidbey, Lauren?
Yeah.
But you're originally from Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
and you also moved here from somewhere, Sarah?
No, I'm from, like, Eastside Seattle.
Oh, okay. So you and I kind of have the same story in that regard. Okay, okay. And
Seattle-y and
yeah.
Way south.
North Seattle, East Seattle. Okay. Somehow I'd understood that otherwise before. Okay.
I lived in New York for a year, so maybe that was it.
What took you to New York?
Grad school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Psychology, actually. Cognitive psychology.
Okay, yeah.
Wait. Am I mistaken? Have we had a doctor on the show before?
No, we have not had a doctor on.
Oh,
nope.
Okay, just not
a,
okay.
Just an MA.
Okay, okay, okay. No, I had about a week in New York, with going there for bagpiping, and when you grew up around this, and you go to New York. It kind of freaked me out. So too much cement, too much graffiti.
I definitely wrote in this book about different cultures, like Midwestern nice and Minnesota nice, was actually felt oppressive to me, because you're not, there's a very limited range of emotional expression, shall we say, and there's a lot of coded communication that's, a lot of it is passive aggressive. And, you know, it's like, I never felt I could be myself. And then to go, so when I went to college in New York area, to Sarah Lawrence College, and then I got to go into the city regularly, I was like, oh, these are my people, you know, at least for a while. Even though I'm a nature person, it was like, there was so much eccentric stuff and modern art and out-of-the-box stuff. Mm. And I felt like, I feel more at home now, you know, I feel like it made my brain cells zing. and makes me happy to be around creative, interesting people. A lot of poetry readings, all those things are going on.
So being in an environment like that probably helped spur more writing from you and inspired more out of you.
Yeah.
Versus being in like an environment back where you're from, where you're saying you didn't feel like you really belonged or like you didn't quite fit or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And just coming here, it just felt like, you know, when you're always, okay, for me, I understand this whole idea. I remember this poster that used to be popular, bloom where you are planted, you know, which for you is like Whidbey in the Pacific Northwest. And for me, it was the Midwest. And I'm like, no.
Sure.
I need to, I kept trying. Like, here's, will I ever find my tribe, my people, my place? Where will I ever feel really at home? I just, so I kept searching and in some, you know, probably just self-destructive ways, you know, searching through things that weren't healthy, but then searching, you know, going a lot at both coasts for college and all over the place and visiting so many places and people. And when I, my daughter moved to Whidbey and I moved here, I visited her here just to visit her. I was like, oh yeah, something tells me I need to hang out here more. And I wasn't sure right away what, you know.
Sure.
And I'm not sure I could even now articulate what, but it's like, definitely the forest, the beaches, the Salish Sea, but the people, you guys, the people here, you guys were really blew me away. Of just, there's a natural openness and curiosity and caring that I kept encountering in South Whidbey. And then when I, 3 months after I moved to the island, when I did finally move here, 3 months later found out, oh, I have breast cancer. And then the caring community even showed up more. You know?
Wow.
And I was like, I may be, I don't yet have doctors. I don't yet have health insurance in the state of Washington. And I have to go for all these things that I have to do. I have to take a ferry and go through Seattle traffic. So inconvenient, but I am in the right place. I just felt like, oh, this is the place I need to be in for my healing. You know,
well, that was my next question. Like, do you think by being here, it helped with your journey through cancer and bringing that healing and everything to you?
Yeah, I really do. And I have a whole chapter in my book, Reconfigured, a memoir, by because
it's available on blah 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 for only $19.99.
It is available online and in bookstores and in and libraries, and it's $17.95.
Ooh, look at that.
Close, right?
Just put it on sale.
Paperback and also available on Kindle. And so, I forgot the question.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah, no. Totally fine. No, I had mentioned. Oh, my gosh. No, I just mentioned by living here and moving to the island, maybe that's something that helped you with your healing process through
cancer. Oh, I was just going to say, I have a chapter in here. That's now I remember. There's a whole chapter of a particular place on South Whidbey Island in Langley called Healing Circles Langley, which I just thought was a cool place because people sit in a circle and go around and do a talking stick, if you're familiar with that idea of passing a piece around where everyone has a chance to talk. Totally opposite of my family, who were just as a third daughter, I was like, when do I get to talk? And I'm like, now I know. Everyone, when I hold the stone or the stick, I'm like, I get to talk, and I get
or your keyboard.
What?
Or your keyboard.
Or your keyboard, if you're what?
An author.
Oh, right, right. But for me, it was like having someone hear what I said was important, because as an extrovert, I don't know what I'm thinking until I say it out loud, and there needs to be space. And then in the space between me and the listener, I'm like, oh, that's what I'm feeling. Oh, no wonder. Oh, that's what I need to do. Blah, blah, blah. So I have to figure things out with other people opposite of my husband. He's like, no, I'm figuring it all out here, and
sure,
I might or might not share. So when I got to sit in circles at healing circles, and it was just like, at first it was like women's circles, or there was a Right to Heal, W-R-I-T-E.
Oh,
like
that's clever.
Right to
yeah.
Heal circle, which I don't think is happening now, and a lot of things got, you know, set aside for a little while during, you know, COVID,
as far as meeting in person. Disrupted a lot. Yeah,
but then it went global, and so now there's healing circles in lots of countries now, which is cool. But I'm really happy. I'm happiest doing the in-person thing, and we're getting back to that. And so, of course, as soon as I found out I was, even when I found out I had to go for biopsies to see if I had cancer, I started like, oh, I'm going to go hang out at healing circles. I knew I could say whatever I'm going through, and I'd figure out what it is I needed if I could be in a circle that was supportive of that, where we witness each other and just... We don't try to change or rescue or advise each other. It's not therapy. We're all equal in the circle, whether we have degrees or we don't,
sure.
Whatever. And it's just being human together and having silence to really, like, center, which is, I need a little encouragement sometimes to do that. And so it was just, that's why I wrote a whole chapter about it, because it was such a key part of my getting through what I had to get through. It wasn't the medical part, it was the emotional.
Would you say that getting into that space helped or changed the balance for you for your writing process? Contributed to that? I worded it a little bit funny, but I'm trying to find
what that is.
It
probably meant I was journaling less because I found a place
so
to,
you're kind of voicing
what was inside.
So
I might have written less in a way.
Okay.
But I became more clear about what I went through.
Yeah, was your writing more concise at that point then? Like it became like, it wasn't so much you searching for what to say, you already knew what you wanted to say, so you were able to get it down exactly how you wanted to type idea.
Yeah. So, let's see if I can find it. How are we on time?
Oh, you're right.
Oh, we're fine.
Okay. I just wanted to say, too, I loved what you said about how talking to other people helps you process that. And that, like, just, like, accepting that as talking is valid, it's a valid way to process feelings. Because I think so much in our culture, we're like, no, everybody deals with everything on their own. So it's nice to just have that be, like, an accepted.
In my family, you'd go in your room and close the door, slam the door if you really want to. Mad. But you process it on your own.
Sure.
I don't know, in Louisiana people are maybe a little more, where you grew up might have been more open.
It, you know, it depends on the family, of course. But, you know, when I was younger, I did a lot of just processing everything on my own. But as I've gotten older, it's now I'll call my sisters. Even for like the smallest inconvenience, I'll call them and I'm just like, I really need to get this out. I need to vent this. And they're like, okay, I'm listening. You know, and so,
That's really nice.
So I'll just get it out, and then I'm like, okay, I can move on. You know, and it's not brewing within me, you know, if that makes sense.
And
so.
You write fiction, right?
I do.
And so do you ever process through your fiction in a way, or turn something personal you went through into part of your narrative, your story?
Not so much, no.
It's more imagination.
It's more,
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, well, and I also have a hard time, this is, I don't know, but I have a hard time, once I'm past it, it's hard for me to go back and really feel the depths of those emotions. Like, whenever I was feeling it at the time, it was really strong, deep emotion, but once I'm past it, it's kind of like, I can't quite access that anymore. Like, I know that made me angry, or I know that made me sad, or I know that made me, you know, happy or whatever, but the memory is just kind of just like a logical memory at that point. It's no longer an emotional memory.
Sounds like you're over it.
Been processed. Yeah.
It's done, been processed, and it's been filed.
That sounds healthy.
But
I like to carry them around. No.
But in a way, it's also difficult because, like, going back, like, okay, like, what's a really happy memory? Well,
I see.
Well, my birthday, probably.
When I was like, you know, a Christmas one time.
Lunch last Tuesday was good.
Yeah, it was a great chicken sandwich. So at times it's hindering, but at times it's like, oh, that's probably really helping.
Oh, God, so. All my writing is just all working out my demons. It's just, oh, that's my character. This is this part of my personality. This mm-hmm. is this part of my personality. Mm-hmm. This is this problematic part of my personality. It's, yeah. They're all talking to
don't
each other.
Don't tick Sarah off. You will become a villain.
No, in they're all me. They're all me. There's no worry.
Sarah, like, can I please be a villain?
Sure, we'll try. It'll have to be half you, half me. Like, 60-40, maybe. That's all I can manage. It's all just part of my subconscious.
This is fiction?
Yeah.
Oh, but it comes from a place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Feeling.
What I do with, like, my main characters especially is, like, when they do have, like, these emotional moments, I tend to write them how I react. So the depth of the emotion that they feel is how much emotion I feel. And how I react. And I'm very much like a physical person, so whenever I'm writing, I tend to be pacing. Like, I have, like, my laptop set up, and then I'm pacing in front of it, and I'm talking out loud to myself until I get, like, the right sentence that I like, and then I type it out, and then I, like, keep going. It's a constant little process. Awesome.
You just need voice to text.
You know, except that I'm re-saying, like, the same sentence until I'm happy with the type idea. Like, I'm just trying to wrestle through the problem.
Sure.
Like, okay, like if it's a fight scene, for example, right? Like, I'm trying to, like, figure out, okay, they're going to do this and this. Does that work? Or does that put me in a corner? Like, does this work? Or, you know, so I'm saying
I hope
it
your roommate understands you.
I have no roommate. It's my dog.
Okay. Because otherwise your roommate...
And he knows that I'm psycho.
Your roommate would be sitting there watching the TV, listening to you having this argument with yourself. But if it's a fight scene, I don't know if there's some, ooh, pow, ah, you know, some Batman stuff in there.
Yeah, you know... No, but
I mean, when I'm on a phone call where, like, one way or another it matters, or it's a conversation where we're developing something, I'll pace, mm-hmm. right? The old days, I needed a long phone cord.
Yeah.
Okay, now I need just really good Bluetooth connection, or, you know, I can actually carry the phone.
Yeah.
But no, I'll do that too. But
yeah.
I've thought a lot about partly because I think I can create faster and it would be more satisfying to have the writing go the speed my brain and my mouth go. But also because I'm concerned about repetitive use on my hands, because I'm also, this is my instrument, really.
Mm-hmm.
I can replace my bagpipes, can't replace my hands, right?
Sure.
So this is, it's pretty important. You know, but I've thought about figuring out one way or another how to do a voice to text right now on a budget, but I've heard of people that have portable devices.
Tons of programs that you
right.
can download. I had friends, buddies of mine, coworkers, who, you know, we would have to write reports daily, right? And they didn't want to take the time to sit down and actually type it out, so they would just do a voice to text and just get it done faster.
Sure.
You know?
And if there's a repeated sentence in there, that when I go back through and do my self edit,
mm-hmm.
that's
yeah.
when I'll go, oh, that was the third sentence, the third time I said this, that I like that the best, delete.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
I like the idea of, like, a Law and Order episode, but they're reading the police report, but it's like somebody did a voice to text, and it's like really awkward.
Yeah, no, I've had
just thinking about this because I'm trying to switch from doing scuba diving work as my main income to being an audiobook narrator. So I'm always thinking about, like, how would you read this?
Yeah. Sure.
Oh, you've got a good voice for audio. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, you do. Mm-hmm.
Well, audiobook narration apparently is more, you don't need the announcer voice, right?
No.
It's more a matter of knowing your voice and being able to tell a story with it
mm-hmm.
and bring out different characters with it.
And I've been told that I should do an audiobook, and that when it's memoir, a lot of times the writer does narrate it themselves, and I'd be interested in doing that. I haven't yet.
When you were talking earlier about, like, speaking directly to your audience, it reminded me of an audiobook that I had listened to one time, and I think you, now that you mentioned audiobooks, I think you'd be really interested in this. So, I don't know if you know who he is, but David Goggins, he was a Navy SEAL. He's a really famous kind of motivational speaker. At this point, totally recommend his book.
Okay.
He has his physical book that you can get, but if you get the audio book, he has the narrator read it, but at the end of every chapter, he sits down and he gives you more information and he goes more in depth, and so you get more out of the audio book than if you just bought the actual physical book itself.
So, yeah, going beyond your expectations.
Exactly.
Like I love that.
So, it's an idea of something you could do. Like, as you go through your book, if there's things that were cut that maybe just didn't fit or didn't quite work or whatever, you could add that little bit extra for the audio listeners, you know.
That's
or maybe
it's
something
idea.
You can express verbally and feel that you can nail, whereas you don't necessarily feel like you quite got it in the written word.
Exactly. So it was a really cool experience, and like to listen to that and get that little bit deeper insight, you know.
Right. So, just to think of different ways of doing things is helpful, and so you don't get stuck in one.
Exactly. Yeah, and there's no right or wrong way to do things like that. So yeah.
Well, that I just want to touch on before we end, at least that when I moved here, I had heard there's all these writing things. There was an actual writing institute where you graduated from, and as soon as I moved here, boom, everything was defunct. And I was like, what happened?
Well, so some history there. Tom, Trimbeth, and I did writing. We founded Writing on Whidbey Island. We did the show for just about 3 years, and then he handed it over to me here in this past spring. He was, and I only know so much about this, he was one of the founders of that MFA program. So that actually was some time ago. And one of the ones that, because Tom and I were really good at generating ideas when we weren't on the air, so to speak. One of the ones that we had talked about that we would love to see happen, and we thought of growing this in different ways. One was that we thought it would be great to connect the writers and editors and illustrators and all the people that are on the island by having a social event, right? And then we also thought that maybe we could grow that social event into a weekend workshop sort of thing, where it would kind of be like a weekend college, in that at any one time we have three classes and you can go sit in whichever one, you know, three workshops, and that it would be a thing that, you know, hey, eventually what it would grow into is we would have a social Friday night, we'd have workshops Saturday, and then another evening social, and then Sunday workshops, and then, you know, one way or another, group get together, hey, great that you were here, see ya. But I'd thought that doing it almost a little bit like a, call it a sci-fi con, would be a bit of a character to bring to it. And, you know, who knows, that could still happen. I'm still in contact with Tom. He's still, he's still getting more recognition for writing on Whidbey Island than I am. That'll change.
Don Scobie now.
Yeah, well, really, I want to see Wowie get its own recognition. And part of that, too, is because, I'm a founding member, but the show, I'm looking to grow it into the direction that Tom and I just basically never had the time to do. And because it is Lauren, it is Sarah, it's going to be Daniel Moore coming on here too in the next couple of months. I'd like it to be its own presence, and it's already been developing that way during the past, almost 4 years, because I think Tom and I started in September 4 years ago on a beach. you know, so where we have this crow and some of these cars in the background and things like that, I mean, we had waves, seagulls, and jet planes, you know. We sat down and recorded one episode and then decided to take a break and stand up and stretch and crack and pop and move and you know, ground gravel for a minute, and then we sat down and recorded the next one. We've had ideas for the show. We've had ideas for a workshop like this. Which would be a retreat for a lot of people. Just never had the time to do that. But, I'd like to get Wowie bumper stickers and stuff like that. So, we'll see what we can do. And I have the Wowie team now. We can work on that. So all in good time. But, we should wrap up the show here. But I would like to do what we often do, which is a little bit of, I think the term would be round robin. In respects to what's next for you, in respects to your writing, and at least with Lauren and Sarah, because of the interim show that we did a couple of months ago, we have a little bit of follow-up to do. So we'll get there, but since you are our guest today, Barbara, what's next for you in writing?
Oh,
thank you, Dan. It's so great to be here with you and Sarah and Lauren, and to be out here in South Whidbey State Park.
Oh, yeah. We're at South Whidbey State Park today.
We're on location.
Yes.
And I've been working... Well, that's kind of funny. But I'll start with saying a project that I definitely am working on is there was a story out of Japan from mid-1800s that I think is a really important children's story. And it's about a fellow named Manjiro who was cast away and lost at sea and lived, you know, he was a boy. Mm-hmm. And the way he survived and the way he traveled the world and was the first Japanese person to live in the United States and then what made it back to Japan at a time when if you had left the country and came back, you were killed or mm-hmm. in jailed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the things he went through, I could talk about him too yeah. for all day. But and so I think it's a great story for, there are some books about him for, you know, more chapter books. But I want to do a book for the young people, maybe middle grade, 9 and 10 years old.
Oh, yeah.
They say yeah. that the most important trait at that early age when you're in elementary school is... not IQ, it's grit, perseverance.
Mm.
How long are you willing to try to learn that, whatever you need to learn in school? And so this is like the best example I've ever seen of grit in my life. This
sure.
guy had such gaman, you know, such mm-hmm. strength, and he helped change the world. He helped open the port because he said, I know who these people are. I live
wow.
there, and don't be so, you know, he was a poor fisherman. He became a samurai. So love writing about Manjiro. I had an agent look at it. She wants some changes. We'll see what happens. And the other thing was when I had my Kirkus review, which is a review that is important to me because it goes to librarians and bookstores and stuff. The Kirkus review was very good. Yay. Mm. They're not always.
Yeah. Congratulations
and,
on that.
their one critique was readers may want to learn more of the author's spiritual practices and beliefs, something like that. And I'm like, oh, I talk about Buddhism, I talk about communing with nature, but I want people to apply their own spirituality. I don't want to be preachy.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I was restraining myself, but I thought, I'd love to write a book.
It's also personal.
Yeah, it's very personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd like to write a book of essays, of just exploring more of those things, not religious necessarily, but how do we get through the day as a human being. Sometimes it's not
sure,
easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've had those days and just what I've learned and what I've put to practice. And yes, we can do that tenju kyoju of lightening our karma. We can change we have certain patterns that we can change at a very core level. So I'd like to write about those things that can help, that have helped me and may help some other people.
Say go for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was contacted here by David Greger, who owns Greger's Rare Books in Langley. He was an early interview that Tom and I did. Tom and I could have talked with that guy all day. We just had a ball. He's just released a poetry book. And we were talking whether he was self-published and these sort of things. But he had this line that he said. He said, every book has an audience, whether it's 10 people or 1,000 and gaining.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, that goes back to where we were talking about that, you know, you may need to write that for yourself, but not just to, you know, anybody writing any book. I'm not saying you personally, Barbara, but, you know, if you build it, they will come, right? If you write that, you've got the audience somewhere. There's going to be other people that identify with that and receive something from that. I want to see what happens with that for you.
Thank you so much.
So, Sarah... As I recall from our interim podcast, which is still not published on the website, which is currently down, but will be back up soon. I'll do my best to do that. I recall from being at the library back in June that you said that you were thinking that you might try and build out one of the, I believe it was third book to one of your series, and maybe this summer. And then you turned around and said, oh God, I said that in the recording. Now I'm kind of accountable.
You were so nice about that too. You were like, I can't remember exactly what you said, but I got this impression of like, it's okay. I don't have to achieve things. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I said, you know, there's deadlines we set, or we can set goals. Yeah, that, because if you give yourself a deadline, then, you know, yeah, sure, that's accountable. It's one way to do it. I personally, I can't have that stress and do the thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, yeah. Goals you can move,
totally.
And I'll come back to that in a minute. But this is about asking you. So, did this happen? Is there development?
Development, yeah.
Cool.
There's development, and it's been happening, and I am 30,000 words into the third book, and I'm...
How many words planned?
Well, unfortunately, I'm like a tenth of the way through the outline, so...
That's a long outline.
Yeah. It's probably going to be like 100. 120,
wait, the outline isn't 30,000 words.
No. I was like, you have 30,000
okay,
words.
Okay, that wasn't just
outline.
Me. Okay.
I was like, my God.
The outline is probably 10,000 words long, but that's not including the character document, and it's also not including a bunch of free writing about it.
Okay, so she has a 30,000 word outline, is what I'm hearing.
30,000 word development, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's whether we're joking or that's actually a legit marker, I mean, that's your process, so
yeah.
No
you
judgment
title
there.
Or something? Is this a series?
Yeah, which series?
Oh, yeah, it's a fantasy novel. The series is the Shadows of Magic series, so the first
yeah.
book is just called Shadows of Magic.
Yeah, Sarah writes both in, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I often am, and I'm humble about that, she writes in fantasy, but she also, or science fantasy?
Just fantasy.
Fantasy. She also writes in math.
Yeah. Math and physics, nonfiction.
Oh.
A little bit too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, 30,000 words in, and I took July off to do that, and then I was getting ready to go back to work in August, and I was just, you know, I was noticing that I was going to have a lot less time to focus on my book and just how much that meant to me, and I've wanted to be a writer since I was a little kid, and I kind of... I've always thought that, like, eventually I would write something good enough that would make money that I could quit my job and be a writer. And I decided to instead just quit my job and spend a year being a writer. So I have now mostly quit my job, and I'm taking a year off to just spend a year being a writer. Yep. So that's the plan, and I feel good about it.
Good. Good luck to that end. I did 3 years as a fully self-supporting starving artist as a musician, and it's a trick, but it's liberating.
Cool.
Gosh, if you can do it, go for it. I mean, there's those of us who have those dreams, those of us that never go after them. Right? Golly, good luck.
Thanks.
So
yeah, we'll
when do you think book three is gonna see the light of day?
A draft by November, and then I'll do like give it to editors, and then I'll probably, you know, realize that it's all in the wrong order and rearrange all the scenes, and then probably rewrite it again from the beginning for another couple months, and then I'll probably get some beta readers. So I don't know, I've stopped predicting. I'm usually like, oh, it'll be done by November, no problem, and then it's like a year later, and so I don't know, maybe June next year, maybe.
Takes as long as it takes.
Yeah.
Well, but okay. So even to say, we did that last recording. That was June, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been saying June. So still, if that's only about a year later, that's a very realistic time for any book. So, good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Sound very diligent.
We'll
about
all
it.
Party.
I'm impressed. Yeah.
We'll all
it's
party.
It's not easy to be a writer, and there's times when you can't, it's hard to keep going, but
yeah.
It sounds like you've got a plan.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I'll lose them.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Lauren, you're next.
Hi.
Hello.
What a thing to follow, though.
What a surprise, yeah. Or, I mean, it could have been me, but that would have been rude. And I try and pare that down. Anyway. Things happen, okay? So as I recall from our recording before, you had joined a writing group, and
yeah.
You were also working on short stories, is that correct?
Yeah. I've also got my longer novel, quote-unquote, that I'm working on and currently kind of sending through the writer's group.
Okay.
So they're getting chapters of that, or sections of that, rather, whenever it's my turn for the hot seat. if you would. So,
okay.
Yeah. But yesterday, actually, I was supposed to sit down and work on that novel, but I was just really struggling. I was telling Sarah this. I'm at a spot right now that I'm just like, I have the image of what I want in my head, and I know where I want it to go, but I'm really struggling to actually get it on the page and get it moving and flowing. And so instead of working on it yesterday, I ended up writing a completely separate, totally different, just short story that is nothing but just biting sarcasm.
And when's this going to be available?
But yeah, it was so, you know, it was so funny because I've been struggling so hard with this one little part. I have just struggled to get anything out, and then that little piece just flowed so easily. And I was like, my God. So it was the first draft, so I'm going to edit it, and I'm going to send it to the writer's group. But if you want a copy of it, I'll send it to you.
And if you want, I'll send you Go-Go Penguin and Mammals Hands websites for new chapters. All the music is on YouTube anyway. That's where I got it from.
So I have a couple of other little short stories that are now done and out, and then, and like I said, I'm just still just trying to whittle away at this little novel that's currently kicking me in the face, right? Like a toddler.
Okay. Is it something, when you say picture, I got almost like this idea that it's visual for you.
Yes, it's very visual for me. Okay. So I literally have images in my head, almost, not quite
that's kinda
film,
cool.
But like almost like still images. Like so in a movie you have a storyboard, right? And they have like those still images that they're
going to.
And that's what I have in my head. I have like these still images of this is going to happen and this and this and this. So when it comes to writing it, I have this idea, but how to say it is not there yet. So that's where I'm getting kicked in the teeth a little bit with this particular scene and moment. It's supposed to be a very kind of dark and emotional moment. And so I'm having to dig deep with things that like, I already struggled to do because I can't remember how it So it's fun.
The personal challenge is the fun.
The personal challenge is what's fun, yes.
Okay.
No.
Well, I'm glad to hear that's got creative juice for you.
Yeah,
though.
And I've turned off my word count thing on because it became too much of like a pressure, if that makes sense. And so I'm especially with this one, I'm trying to take out all stress that's associated and connected with it. So I've taken away like any quote unquote deadline, and I've taken away the word count, and I've taken away, you know, things like that, because it was just becoming too much and too heavy, and I was getting really discouraged. So I was like, all these things that are causing issues need to go. So that's what I did. So now it's kind of free form in a way. So
that's cool. I like
that. Yeah.
I like that. There, I have a author friend in Montana, and she was turning out fantasy and sci-fi, and she was sending it to me saying, read this. What do you think? I'm like, this is great. I want to see the book, but I've got some fiction that I want to write, but how is it that you're doing this easy? And it's reminiscent for me because you said the movie thing, and she said, oh, I just see it like a movie in my head, and then I just write the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, no big deal, right? It's like, I have the movie in my head, and yet, like, I can't write the first word that's not in note form.
Yeah.
Right? I can't write the first creative, intended to be serious done thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I enjoy hearing about your short stories and your process because I get encouragement out of that.
Good.
Toward,
I'm glad. Yeah.
Toward the ones that I want to do.
Because
I'm just like, I either self-doubt that I'm not ready or I'm just not ready and I am taking steps to prepare for that.
Sure,
but
sure.
I like hearing that process.
Yeah, so. And with these short stories, even if none of them end up in the overall story, I can still take elements from them. So like if I had created this city, for example, in this short story and I liked it, I could use that city in my main novel, or if this particular character, or this particular moment, or right. scene, or even just this particular paragraph, you know, change the character names and
right.
move over. So it creates a well of resources in a way that I can just transfer
cool.
if need be, in addition to being practice, in addition to help stretch that creative muscle in a way.
We should talk about what Frank Herbert did in preparing for Dune.
Oh, I would be interested yeah, well, to hearing.
Yeah. Your people, my people. So I'm keep going. I want to hear more as that develops. That's
okay.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
So
it's super good. I've read a couple chapters and it's so good.
Oh, thank you.
So I'll just end up starting out on the snarky, sarcastic stuff.
It's quite sarcastic. I'm very proud of it.
And I'm proud of you for that. wow. So Sarah, you were talking about where I mentioned before, you know, work on a deadline, work on a goal, you know, whatever works for whoever. Right. So I started a Christmas cookie recipe book here a couple of years ago, and I thought I was going to have that one done in a year. That's been like 3 years already, and I think that's going to have to be another year. I was hoping to have it releasing, what's the day? We'll keep it evergreen.
26.
The 26th? Okay, so it's the end of August anyway. I was aiming to have this released somewhere in about the next 30 days, and yeah, it's not going to happen. I was going to do the Amazon trick of release a book and then release another book within 30 days mm-hmm. to get the extra 30 days on the first book. You don't know about this?
No.
Okay, we'll talk about this once we're done.
Okay.
Anyway, I had basically four books that were getting done, and I was looking to release September, October, and then January, February.
Gotcha.
And the books that were going to be the ones that helped promote the other two main books, yeah, those are ready. But...
So you do your side quest before your main quest.
You could put it that way. Yeah. And it's not that was quite intentional. I just didn't have time. So yeah, I'm moving that goal, but you know, I look at it as the no wine before it's time. You know, I'd rather have it done the right way, the way that I'm happy and proud of and can mm-hmm. stand behind, as opposed to I pasted and slammed this thing together, but by gone it was out on the date. Yeah, it's not touching the table.
It's safe.
Yeah, the recording unit's safe. Anyway, yeah, so those have gotten moved. But I have made this huge list of the Celtic recipe book, the Christmas cookie book, the recipes that need to be done, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then my recipes of the month that I am kind of like about a year behind on releasing on my website for free, which is what those other books are written from.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I have this list of like well over 30 recipes that I need to work on, which, you know, as a food cooking, baking sort of person, on one hand, I kind of look at these lists and go, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed. On the other hand, ooh, I get to get in the kitchen and do all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? So yeah, I'm trying to get a few things out of the way right now that are taking priority, and within the next week or two, you know, if you want a bunch of experimental food, come over to Don's place. You might like it. You might like it. So yeah, those you know, that's that. But you know, I've like I was talking about that, the book I puked out earlier. There's other ones. I want to get that back on my radar. It's time. And then I have about, I actually have this other fifth book that I've been writing during these fourth books. But yeah, I've got about four or five other books that are on the middle burner.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, there's the front, the middle, the back, and then there's the shelf over here, the refrigerator, the deep freezer. Yeah. The cupboard or, no, the pantry. So yeah, there's some other books that, I am really excited about getting back to work on too, but I kind of need to get these other ones out of the way. And then, you know, I mentioned before that I'm working toward becoming an audiobook narrator, and ideally that is going to get its start before the end of the year, even if it's not pay gigs. I'm supposed to narrate one of Tom Trimbeth's book, Walking, Thinking, Drinking in Scotland. which I have my own Scotland experience, so I know what I want to bring to that. So, but ideally I'll be able to work on my books a little bit better with the stability of audiobook narration as my weekly schedule. So we'll see.
Very cool.
But yeah. Anyway, to that end, let's wrap this sucker up. And yeah, Barbara, thank you very much for joining us today and joining in the conversation and also telling us about your background within writing, your experience, and also with your memoir reconfigured. If I can get words out of my mouth into a recording unit, which would be good for somebody that's going to be an audiobook narrator.
Thank you for having me. This is fun. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. Well, I would like to thank everyone who is listening for joining us here as another episode of Writing on Whidbey Island. Please visit our website, which I know it's not working right now, but I'll get it fixed soon. Visit our website at writingonwhidbeyisland.com, and please keep an eye and an ear out for our next podcast. And in the meantime, keep creating. Thanks. Bye.